It's the truth, don't it?
Yes. Yeah, if it wasn't for that 22 months, man, I don't think I could have survived. It really got me through a very difficult time. The meetings
when you came,
AA.
When you came back in, then you were, what, 27?
26.
That's January 10th.
Yep.
Right.
And I lived next door to the church where my home group was. So I literally walked
across. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, I walked across the driveway. Joe. Oh, yeah, okay.
That's a favor. I'm going to mute now.
Okay, my brother ran a cleaning company. And when I was growing up, you know, I was getting in all this trouble, so I had all these legal fines. And so my mom forced me to work for him. And I had to clean this factory at night. And I would, you know, I was still partying on the weekends, and I would go in there drunk at midnight. And I just had to sweep and mop the floors and, you know, clean the bathrooms and stuff. And it wasn't like anything I couldn't do under the influence. You know, there were times I went in there and I was too drunk to do it. So it caused us a lot of problems. So years later, he had this cleaning contract with churches in the Cleveland area. And this guy was on vacation, so he sent me over there to fill in for this guy. And basically all I had to do was hang around in case anything happened, you know, because it was a school full of kids and they gave school lunches. So I would clean up the cafeteria after the kids ate and then just goof around basically all day. I didn't really do much. But they closed, and they would give me lunch every day. So I got to eat the school lunches. And they closed one day for a holiday, but I still had to go. And I went across the street to this diner and for lunch. And this lady said, "Do you want the newspaper while you're waiting?" And I was like, "Sure." So I'm, you know, waiting for breakfast, and I'm looking through the want ads, and here's this job of this church. They were hiring somebody to do basically what I did there, just maintenance and security. And so I call him up, you know, and I'm working for my brother, and I'm thinking, you know, if I work straight for the church and eliminate my brother, the middleman, I'll make more money. So I call this lady up on the phone at the church, and I said, "I'm calling about the ad in the paper." And she said, "Yeah, you just have to submit a resume, and we'll consider you for the job." And I said, "Well, I don't want the job. I just want to know how much it pays." And she's like, "We're not giving out salary information over the phone. You have to fill out a resume, and if you're accepted, then we'll call you in for an interview." And I was like, "Look, I don't want the job. I'm not going to fill out a resume. I just want to know how much it pays because I'm working for my brother at a church. And I want to know how much more money I'd make working directly for a church." And she says, "Look, I'm not going to tell you how much they pay. You have to put in a resume." And I was like, "All right." So I get out this yellow legal pad and a pencil, and I write out the ugliest resume in the world. I mean, it was printed with a pencil, and they called me in for an interview, and I got the job. They hooked, and there was like 12 parishioners that were part of the church that wanted that job, and they brought me in from outside and hired me over all these people. And I didn't even want it, you know, until I got there to bring it, because I delivered the resume, or no, I mailed it in. And then when I went to get the interview, I walked into the church and all the lights were off, and they had these beautiful stained glass windows. And the sun was coming through the stained glass windows, and it just felt like that's where I was supposed to be. It was such a cool feeling going into that church with the sun coming through the stained glass windows. I'll never forget it. And yeah, they hired me, and I was there for 10 years. I would have stayed forever, but I got divorced. And but they gave me the house right next door to the church. So I lived there, and I walked my kids across the street to school as they were growing up. And I cut the grass and shoveled the snow, and it was just I really enjoyed that job. And that's where I was drinking at the end. You know, I was drinking around the clock while I was working at the church and growing pot in the basement. And then my wife called the police on me, and I got arrested again. I got a DUI and a bicycle. And they took my driver's license away, which I didn't think they could do because I was on a bicycle. But they did. And that's how I got sober again. They sent me back to meetings. And that was the last place I wanted to go, man. I was drinking round the clock. I was physically addicted to alcohol. I had basically stopped eating it, and I was just burning alcohol. That was like my sustenance. And I didn't want to go back to AA. I didn't want to quit drinking. But they sent me back to meetings, and you guys saved me again. AA saved me. And that's how I got sober, yeah. But it, that awesome. it just shows me that this disease, you know, like when I was sober a while, I look back over that time I was sober the first time, and it was the best time of my life. You know, I had so much fun with my sober friends and everything was really good. And, but once I start drinking, I don't think that way. My thinking changes completely, and staying sober is the last thing I think about. Last thing I even consider. I'm going to drink until I get caught. You know, and that's what, you know, it's like all those years I drank and did drugs. It's like, I knew I was going to get caught again. Eventually the trip was going to stop. And that's just a feeling I had every day. I was like, someday this is going to end, you know? But I was going to do it until the end.
What was the first year or two like without it? A few months, days?
No, I remember 6 days. That was a big fucking deal. And it's like I just couldn't believe that I'd made it 6 days. I didn't think I was ever going to be able to do that again. 6 days was like this huge accomplishment. After that, it's like I got the feeling like, you know what, this is actually nice fucking work. I might be able to get out of this hole. Because it really felt like, you know, I just destroyed everything. And there was no coming back from that. And then after that, it was pretty easy. You know, once I got through the, you know, I tapered off the booze on my own. You know, I just drank one beer less a day, or, you know, I'd go one beer an hour and then one beer every 2 hours. And that took, you know, probably 2 months to get completely off. But I was smoking weed. I had all this weed that I'd grown. And so I smoked weed every day to help get off the drinking. And then eventually I wanted to get completely sober, and I knew I couldn't be sober if I smoked weed. It just doesn't work for me for some reason. I don't feel sober. I feel like I'm breaking the rules of AA. And so I had to get rid of it. You know, I had this quarter ounce of bud in my basement, and I couldn't leave it alone. If it was in my house, I was going to smoke it. So I finally just flushed that down the toilet. And that was, you know, January 9th. So January 10th was my first completely clean day.
How do you feel about others smoking when you said it's not for you? Do you don't see that as sober, or it should be your choice? What you see as sobriety?
From what I understand, there's different kinds of weed that give you different kinds of buzzes. So if there's like a physical like painkiller, or I don't really even know what, like glaucoma, I guess they use it for. So yeah, if it's like a medicine, you know, if people need to do it, and I don't think they should be like kicked out of AA or anything, you know. But I know the weed I was smoking kept me from being in reality. It was everything was artificial. It was definitely an altered state. You know, I wasn't sober. I wasn't, you know, 100% present. There was like a barrier between me and the outside world. I guess that's the best way to describe it. You know.
So I've got a buddy that smokes because he's got Parkinson's. Yeah. I rolled a few joints for him because his hands are always shaking. But I can't stay that long, like in the room with him.
Oh, yeah.
Other days I can stay the whole day and he could be smoking away. You know, it's just mental.
Yeah.
And then bang, the next day then it's just like, okay, you have five of them. Let that get you through 2 days, a day and a half, maybe, who knows. But I just can't right now. Then there's other days, lad, where I could fucking, you know, stay there all day with them.
Yeah. And I've lived with girls that drank and did drugs, you know, smoked weed. And it didn't bother me. Like, I could kiss them and taste the alcohol in their breath or their mouth, and it's like the problem has been removed from me. It's really like that.
You never did the non-alcoholic beer, did you?
I did once one night. It was when I was at the church. I was newly sober, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. And we all went out to dinner. And it, like when you work for the church, it's like all these really educated, sophisticated people, you know? And one of them was moving away. So we threw a going away party. So we went out to this really fancy restaurant. And that's, you know, totally not me. You know, I'm like a blue collar, I've never owned a suit, you know, kind of person. And so we were toasting her and I had a non-alcoholic beer. And but I still felt, it's like I could feel it. I could still feel the alcohol in it. It was like 0.005% or something. You know, I mean, it was like barely registered, but I felt it, you know. So I never did it again. And I've known people in AA that start drinking those, and eventually they pick up the drinking again. Oh. If they continue to do it. You know, some people tried it and stopped it. Yeah. You know, it started getting too familiar, or it was, you know, leading them. They started getting urges to drink real beer, so they just stopped it. But other people have just, they're gone. I have a friend that's still drinking because of that.
I've got a buddy who tells me they're not addictive. And then I said it to another buddy, and she was like, I seen him pushing a trolley load of stuff the other day, and I can get fucked. Stay away from me. Yeah, no messing. Like, and he'll just be like, it's just barley water, you know? Fuck it. You know, he just likes the taste. So we all like the taste.
I fucking never liked the taste of beer. I never liked the taste of liquor. I drank it because it did. I liked the way it affected me, you know?
I liked it all, man. I like the taste. I like the middle of slurring me words, the fucking getting more of it, having it, like having two or three drinks to try, trying the new ones, having a few glasses handy.
I did like the feel of a beer bottle in my hand, though.
Right.
There's like when I've had a bottle of soda or pop, you know, and it just goes right back. It's like I never stopped doing it. You know, I could feel that bottle in my hand, and it's like I've been doing it my whole life. And there's just something so familiar about there that it makes me a little uncomfortable.
And it is then with Zoom. You were mentioning earlier with your fucking the brain tumor or the aneurysm, sorry.
Yeah.
But do you wish you had that back then? How long ago was the aneurysm? 3-4 years ago?
2008. So
okay. 12, 13 now.
Yeah.
Wow. You were in the hospital then for how long?
Like 2 weeks, I think. Maybe less. Then I went home and then I had to go back and get it all changed out because I had a staph infection that I got in the hospital.
Shit.
Yeah, so it was about 4 months and I was down before I could go back to work. But I went to meetings then, you know. As soon as I got out of the hospital, I went to meetings because they gave me some really good drugs in there and I was afraid I was going to pick up. So I went right to meetings, even though, you know, I was embarrassed because I had this big fucking scar in my head and all these staples sticking out, you know, so I wasn't like socially comfortable, but I didn't care. I knew I needed meetings and it didn't matter how I felt about it. I had to go, you know. Because I have a big respect for the illness that I have, you know, it's not something I play with.
What's them do you have a slogan you like? Or you least like?
Go to a meeting every day till you feel better.
That's a nice one.
Yeah, but that was before Zoom. I could say, go to a meeting all day, every day, you know? That's pretty much, we have that availability right now. Yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it?
5 a day. So you could do 35 meetings a week if you really wanted it. Yeah.
It's mentally, huh?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I get burned out if I go to too many.
mad. Do you miss the physicalness of it all or whatever, like the being in the room and the laughter? I really miss, you can't hear laughter on Zoom and shit.
I really miss
smoking cigarettes before it, coffee.
No, smelling girl perfume. I really miss that, but that has really nothing to do with AA. I just miss being around girls, in isolation.
It's inviting.
Yeah.
Now we get you a ride soon, but it'll be grand. You'll get your hole in that time.
It's like I was driving, like right when, after the Zoom started, and I was going to Zoom a lot. I was driving to my face-to-face meeting. They had opened it back up, and I was like, the people at my Zoom meeting know me better than any of the people at this face-to-face meeting.
Why is that?
It's just because we spend so much more time together, and we're in each other's houses, and we know. It's like, I know your mother and father. You know my dogs. You know my kids. People in Zoom have never seen my dog, or people at face to face have never seen my dog, or they've never met my kids. So
it's not going away, is it?
No. Well, both of my big meetings have paid up for over a year, so we're going to continue this no matter what. From what I hear, it's going to be, six more months like this. As far as the lockdown goes,
What did you know about Ireland before Zoom?
Well, my sister had been there. My brother-in-law is Irish.
Irish or American Irish?
Irish, yeah. Well, he's American Irish, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his last name's Draper.
Oh, I think you've mentioned that name. That's class.
Yeah, like Don Draper from Mad Men.
But you're the Mad Men.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, he's a really good guy, man. So I know she'd been there, and what I grew up with in the limited education we get here in America about history of the world. But I've always been drawn to like Irish and English, British movies and cinema and music. I've always loved the accent. I've always loved the just hearing something different. Like Ohio is such a, we all talk like monotone, dry, flat. And you guys have almost like a melody to how you talk.
That's cool.
I've always been attracted to British girls and girls that talk different,
Yeah, an accent is nice. Too much of the English accent, though. Oh, boy. Not too much of any accent. It's nice diversity, That's how I met Annie in the sense. Like, I was listening to all the Canadians and the Americans.
Where does that come from, But it's not like French people, I don't like to hear them talk. I dated a girl from Puerto Rico, and I love Spanish girls. But as far as, where did my draw to the Irish English influence come from? Why was that so appealing to me? Is that something in my hereditary that's passed down through the genes? But it's like anything else. Why do you like this car rather than that car? Or why do you like this girl rather than that girl? Where do those things come from? Is that genetic?
That's a good question.
It's like raising dogs. I've raised a lot of dogs over my life. And just seeing them, it's like they automatically know what to do without being trained. Where does that information come from? And there's got to be something to that genetic memory and genetic storage. Things being passed from generation to generation through the genes. Prior to these, the technological discoveries they've made, I was prone to think about past life, that we've been reincarnated, because, it's like a lot of things in my life I've done for the very first time, and they felt totally natural, like I've been doing it all my life. It's like I have these aptitudes and things that other people don't understand make total sense to me the first time I see it. You know, where does that come from?
That's mental, right? Maybe you're a fan of Maureen O'Hara or something growing up.
No, I love like Monty Python, Benny Hill. I love that whole culture, man. I just love it. So that could have been just because the people I grew up with are just so fucking boring, you know? Just flat, you know, monotone, blah, 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 you know? You guys have so much color and flair and personality, you know?
Diversity is good, man.
Yeah.
I mean, what's one of the funniest things you've heard in the rooms? Be it on Zoom or in real life. Oh, I meant to mention that one about Ireland. Like a few months ago, whatever you knew about it. Now a few months later, like you're hosting a meeting in Ireland, yeah. Which is like incredible, you know?
Yeah.
And we got a British and a Canadian girl fucking doing another one in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I heard an Australian man is like hosting like a Los Angeles one. So it's fucking, you know?
Well, so much about the things that you find funny is because of like the situation you're in. It's like I heard this girl lead a meeting. It was this really conservative Irish Catholic AA meeting. And she got up there and she was working construction. And she was talking about when she was drinking and she peed in her hard hat. And I fucking busted out laughing. And nobody else in the room thought it was funny. But I thought it was fucking hysterical. You know, I could just see her squatting over this fucking hard hat, you know, holding onto the truck, you know, with her pants around her knees. It was so funny to me. But I've heard a million funny stories. Like one of my first sponsors, you know, when I was a teenager, he was in his 40s, and this guy could tell the best stories. I mean, you guys have those big plow trucks over there when it snows? They're like big dump trucks with a big blade on the front, and they're full of salt, and they spread the salt on the roads. Well, these things are fun. They're like $1 million. And this guy worked for the city. and his job was to drive around and plow these streets. And he got a brand new truck. And he was drinking while he was working, and he rolled it over the railroad tracks. And I just thought that was, and he told the story. It was so funny. You know, it's just the way people tell stories. Like your guys the other day, man, the Irish guys that were speaking at the meeting in Tusnua. I mean, they were hysterical. Yeah. The guy, what do you say, his socks disintegrated?
Yeah, you know, it starts to decompose on my feet.
Yeah, his socks decomposed. I was laughing my ass off. And then that guy, he's outside the insane asylum smoking. They had a meeting, and the guy comes out and is like, okay, all you guys come back in, all you inmates. And he's like, I'm not one of these people. And he's like, I hear that fucking story every day. Get your ass in here. And it's just those situations are so funny. But I, you know, it's like I really get into stories. I really get into movies. I really get into books. It's like I lose touch with reality. And I'm right there in the moment of whatever I'm reading or whatever I'm watching. I just really get into it. And so like when I hear somebody tell a story, if they're a halfway decent storyteller, I am right there in the minute with them. And I find everything fucking hysterical, you know? Like you and your dad, and I can't last 5 minutes with you and your dad together without laughing, you know?
I told you that one the other day, didn't I? About what's the difference between an Englishman and his photograph?
Yeah.
The photograph is fully developed.
Right. Yeah. He was wound up, man.
Yeah, good old Peter.
It's like I went to my first CA meeting on Zoom, and I had always thought CA was strictly for people that did cocaine. And I went to this meeting, they're like, CA is not a drug-specific meeting, so if you have a problem with alcohol or any other drug, you're welcome here. And I thought that was really cool, you know, because that was a big thing when I got sober, was not to talk about drugs in AA meetings, you know. And I did a lot of drugs. You know, the first time I heard somebody talk about sniffing glue in AA, I felt like I finally fucking fit in, you know? So So that's been really cool. Yeah. It's like we broke through all those barriers. You know, we started that mental health meeting. So we're talking about having mental illness at an AA meeting, where back in the day we weren't allowed to talk about outside issues here. You know, they're like, don't talk about being on medication. You shouldn't be on any kind of medication. The 12 steps is enough. You know, just fucking turn it over and pray to God everything will be all right. And, you know, how many times have we heard that at these fucking Zoom meetings, that people have been 15 years sobriety and still depressed, still wanting to shoot themselves? And that all it was they had some mental illness that wasn't being treated because AA said, don't fuck with any of that. Just do the steps harder, you know? I don't want to group all of AA into that. You know, it's just individual.
What were you saying the other day, where it's you didn't mention God in your share or something you were telling me?
Oh, yeah. I would get done speaking.
What a load of shit.
Right, yeah. Well, what break, was that was a great story, but you didn't mention God at all. Well, there's a reason for that. I wasn't really aware of it at the time. It just wasn't that important to me. I've just always been real big on AA, and I just love AA. The people that are in it, the stories I've heard, the people I've met. It's just made my life so rich.
Is there anything to change about it, though? Because with Zoom AA, it seems to be anything goes. And now with IPAN, anything really fucking goes.
I am looking forward to the future. You know, where else can we go with this? You know what I mean?
Now, we were at a 50th fucking anniversary the other day in Bostonshire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm in Ireland, you're in fucking Ohio. Bang, we were there.
Well, really, I mean, like when the internet first started, this is what they were expecting. You know, worldwide information exchange. You know, us exchanging information with other countries, with other people. And that really never happened. That, not in this sense, you know, where we're all talking together and sharing our experience with AA, you know.
You actually did a fucking an online meeting years ago, you were saying before as well.
Yeah, that was when it was dial-up. And there was no video screen. You couldn't talk. It was all on the computer screen. So you basically typed out.
Fantastic, though. Was the shit, though, at the time.
It worked, man. You know, I was talking to people in Florida when I was in Ohio, you know. That was the beginning. Amazing. Yeah.
It's like if you show kids Pong or whatever now, that fucking tennis game, it's like just the biggest load of shit ever. That was fucking how it started, you know?
I'll never forget. My son got in my car. I bought this old Porsche when I was in Florida. And it had one of those clocks in the dash, you know, with the hands of a clock, like the old clocks that hang on the wall. And my son got in the car and he's like, Dad, what is that? And I was like, that's a clock. And he grew up in the digital age, so they didn't have fucking hand clocks on hands, you know?
Shit.
Hands on the clock, whatever. And he didn't recognize one.
That's crazy.
And my granddaughter, I took her to, I was looking for Jeeps, and we got into this Jeep, and it had the window crank on it. It had manual windows. And she's like, Papa, what's that for? I said, that's a deal breaker, honey. We're not buying this Jeep.
Deal breaker.
Because there was nothing worse when you were driving and it was hot and you had to reach across the seat and roll down the passenger window from the driver's seat because you were sweating your ass off.
Tell me this. What's the first thing you're doing after the pandemic is over, or where are you going? What are you doing? What's the...
Well, I guess it's, I'm not working now and I have money saved. So I'll be able to last for a long time to wait without working. So depending on how all that finances turn out, I don't know if I'll ever get another job again, you know?
Beautiful.
And, depending on my kids, what they want to do, you know, if they want to stay here in Ohio. My son went to Hawaii, you know, he wants to move to Hawaii. I have a daughter in Florida, so that's always an option. Granddaughter in Florida. Ideally, I would like to get like a motorhome and just travel.
Beautiful.
But I'm also a big fan of leaving the country, and I definitely want to go to Greece. I mean, if New Zealand wasn't so fucking expensive, that would definitely be on the list. But yeah, definitely some travel, definitely a lot of family time, a lot of family dinners, you know. I'm sure I'll get to some face-to-face meetings and, you know, start dating another sober girl again.
Nice. If you had 3 wishes, yeah, from a genie, what would that be?
I would definitely like to go back in time, knowing what I know.
Shitload of tobacco.
No, I would definitely like to go back in time, knowing what I know. If I don't, nice. I wouldn't want to lose my kids, though. You know what I mean? Like, if my kids disappeared, I don't think I would make that wish. If they could, if I could somehow, I guess that wouldn't work, huh? No. So I guess I wouldn't go back in time. I would love to be like healthy and young again and keep everything the same. That would be cool. That would be a good wish. I would love the financial freedom to where I'd never have to worry about money again. So I could like spoil everybody I knew and provide a place for all of us to hang out and have fun.
And finally, what advice would you have for anyone listening to this, or just in general, if you meet them in the street, anything at all?
Don't live paycheck to paycheck. Don't live beyond your means. Only spend what you can afford to spend, and keep they call it a prudent reserve at the meetings, but I call it a cushion. So like, if you can get a couple grand extra, life is a lot better when you're not worried about money. And you can save money and buy the shit you want. You don't have to put it on credit and, you know, get in that whole problem. But if you can, that's great too, you know. Like, if you can handle credit cards and you can make the payments on time, that's really the future, because one thing we learned through this whole pandemic is money is not going to be around forever as far as spreading germs and all that. Cash money is very dangerous for that aspect.
It's even dirtier in Europe, lad. So you could be a German man in Ireland using Spanish and French coins.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's good advice. That's her, sir. Leave her there.
Spoil your babies. Your babies turn into humans before you know it. So anytime you can hold that baby. Love that baby, because they get big before you know it. It happens in a fucking blink of an eye. That's crazy. So true.
Good advice, sir. Shanae.
All right. Thanks, man.
That was awesome, Frank. Thank you, buddy. stop, whatever the fuck that button is. Do you want to badmouth anyone before I disconnect? I think we did a good job. We did a really good job. Yeah. I insulted most of England, but fuck them and stop.
Well, you guys got history, you know?